What is mindfulness-based resilience? This is how I came to be doing what I'm doing now. In 2013, I started teaching meditation to a group of friends who then suggested that I teach it at a local church. And so that's what I did, a church room not too far from here. And that was in 2014. In about 2015, I began running mindfulness-based resilience courses. And the reason for that was because, as you know, everybody who joins online, you don't know what topic I'm going to teach. And very often, I don't know what topic I'm going to teach. I might just sit down and whatever comes out of my head. And so they said, look, this is all wonderful, but it's very random. Can you please produce a structured course? By then, I'd realized the level of stress that people are under in the modern world. And that isn't necessarily, oh, here's a subset of people who are stressed out coming to you, because I detect this in friends and family and acquaintances, colleagues. After a while doing this, you get a bit of a stressometer. We're all stressed, and there's lots of very, very good reasons for that. If you're in the modern world and you're not stressed, then there's something severely wrong with you. If you don't experience stress, your ability to process it is what a lot of this is about. So I started teaching stress management techniques, and largely they're pranayama and relaxation. And then I went to one of the accreditation authorities and did a mindfulness course with them, with the idea of teaching what they taught me. But what they taught me is not really helpful for people who are in the modern world and anxious and attending on a Tuesday night after work, which is what most of my students are. Most of the mindfulness training is clinical. So you've got people who are either inpatients or outpatients, and the outpatients may spend quite a lot of time at the facility. So subsequently, it's easier to get them to do things like the body scan, for example. And one of the things I learned pretty soon was that people did not do the body scan. It's a fantastic thing, but because it takes between 25 minutes and 45 minutes, folks didn't do it. So I developed a set of stress management practices that people can build into their day, and also emotional regulation techniques and the mindfulness and meditation practices. And so when I started working with organizations, the organizations have to have a name for everything. So they said, what is it you teach? And I said, well, it's mindfulness-based resilience. And what resilience is the capacity to cope with adversity in a way that helps you cope with future adversity. And it's not, here's a resilient person, here's a not resilient person, so we'll get the not resilient person to do the things that the resilient person does, job done. No, what it is a constant process. And so this was only discovered sort of about 10 years ago, something like that, where a decent longitudinal study, studying people over a period of time, was done in resilience. We learned from that people's resilience is either growing or diminishing. So your ability to cope either grows or shrinks. And so there's a trend, there's a process. Resilience is a process, not a state. And so what I've seen over the course of the last 10 years, I've taught about 3,000 sessions. And on average, let's say there's 10 people in a session. So I've sat across from people 30,000 times. And I've had conversations with them about every aspect of our inner experience that you can imagine. And they feed back to me how they benefit or otherwise from the practices. And I've integrated all of that and continually integrate that into what I teach. And I also spend quite a lot of time researching to understand better the things that I do teach, and also if there are any other things that I can learn. And the places that I research, the mindfulness and meditation practices are nearly 3,000 years old. So the wisdom traditions that have curated them for that period of time, I go there. My go-to meditation teachers, two really, they're both Buddhists. One's name is Galwang Dokampa, and the other is Mingyur Rinpoche. And you'll find them online, and if you need spellings, ask me. So that's where I go for the mindfulness and meditation practices. And I keep my ear to the ground about scientific developments. There's something like 50,000 studies now on mindfulness and meditation of varying quality, but some of them are very informative. And all of that, that combination of stress management, emotional regulation, which I haven't spoken very much about, but it's allied to stress management, and mindfulness and meditation practices, that's mindfulness-based resilience. And what does it do? Okay. It's designed, and all of the practices are designed to benefit you in one of five ways: focus, calmness, relaxation, mindfulness, and resilience. That's what you get. Now, focus is largely about attention regulation, so is calmness. It's about being aware of the mind and noticing that it forms a direction, it will go in a particular place. Be aware of that and regulate its choice. I know somebody very close to me who spends a lot of time in a gloomy place. They don't really have any techniques that help them to become aware of that early and intervene in it. Not internal techniques. So what they do is they rely on distracting themselves, doing things that are pleasurable and so on, which is what most people do. And these are known as coping mechanisms. Yeah. So glass of wine, watch the TV to relax. That's not relaxation. Distract yourself somehow. Keep yourself busy if you've got emotional difficulties. That's what we're told. Exercise is the panacea for everything. Oh, you go for a run and that'll solve it. Well, it doesn't for 97% of people. And we want to build mindfulness. We want to become, it's the foundation of everything else. So what mindfulness is the undistracted awareness of the experience of the present moment. It's all of the sensory experiences that are happening now. And it isn't the past and it isn't the future. And unfortunately, we're trained to live in a world where the past and the future is like a continuum. It's like we're walking along a path from the past to the future. And we're only here to move it along a bit. And it isn't actually, that's the opposite paradigm from mindfulness. Mindfulness, you're aware of the present moment. It doesn't mean that you don't have any memories and the things that happened in the past don't have an effect. And also that you ignore your future and you don't care about it. That's not the case. But you don't let anxiety about the future and regret and resentment about the past rule your present moment, because your life is a succession of present moments. And that's the foundation for all of these techniques. So let's say you've got a stress management technique. You have to be aware that your stress is growing. Otherwise, you can't intervene in it. And so that's where the mindfulness comes in. And calmness is becoming comfortable with the mind. Underlying all of these, meditation practices. That's why we do this meditation class 4 times a week is because it's the meditation practices that enable us to become familiar and comfortable with the mind. A mind is thoughts and emotions, and it enables us to be aware of and focus on the experience of the present moment. And to do that, what we need to do is to train our subconscious. It's our subconscious that becomes aware that there's an emotion arisen, or that our mind's going to an unhelpful place for the 85 millionth time, or whatever it might happen to be. We train our subconscious to become sensitive to our changes in state, and then we give it a set of tools to intervene in it. One of them, just give you an example, pranayama, extending the breath. I was juggling here and I had some problems recording the other day. And I noticed myself, and from time to time, Robert's a little bit stressed, you'll notice him do this. He goes, and I'm breathing out and I notice it. So I've trained myself to reset my physiology by extending my breath. I won't go into the mechanism of how that works now, but it's basic human biology. And it's well known. But they're not going to teach it to you at school. Don't worry. They just let you muddle through. So, mindfulness-based resilience. Let's start with the mindfulness bit. And as I explained a couple of times, I'm no longer going to use the bell. Well, not for a little while. Probably until after the retreat. Because I want us to be able to connect to sound and the breath without the aid of the bell. This is me training your subconscious. So if you get yourselves comfortable and adopt what I call an open, balanced and relaxed posture, and to do that, you want to make your body as stable as possible. So where you place your feet is all about how stable you feel. What is stability? Stability is somebody comes along and pushes you and you're not just going to fall straight over. There's some stability, 3-point stability if you're sitting. And usually that's with feet flat on the floor. And that's all you need to do with the lower part of the torso and the legs. If you're sitting cross-legged, be sure to be in a relaxed cross-legged situation, not an uncomfortable one. The whole idea of it is to become relaxed and comfortable. And then we place our elbows by the side. And what that does is that pulls our shoulders back a bit. And then we find the most comfortable place to balance our head on top of our spine. And we'll either close our eyes or look down past the tip of our nose, down towards the floor at about 45 degrees, just so we don't get distracted by anything that's going on around us. And then another couple of little biohacks that help to relax us. If we place the tip of the thumb and the first finger very, very gently in contact, so gently that you could slide a cigarette paper between them. This is the famous chin mudra that you will see if you go on the internet and type in yoga. You'll see a lot of attractive blonde yoginis sitting on the beach, cross-legged with their first finger and thumb in contact. The secret is a very, very, very light touch. And that actually helps to relax your mind and body. It's a very powerful thing. If it's comfortable for you. If any of this is not comfortable for you, you don't do it. And then if you place your tongue up against the back of the top teeth, provided you don't have a cold, and in contact with the sharp part of the bottom teeth, and you'll notice that that causes you to breathe in and out through the nostrils, and it will also relax your jaw. If you're not sure why, then try a little experiment. Place your tongue between your teeth and tighten your jaw muscles. And you'll discover you can't do it. It's a physiological switch. So when the tongue is in contact with the sharp part of the bottom teeth, it relaxes the jaw. Relaxing the jaw relaxes the face, the eyes. Having your head balanced comfortably means you're not using any of the muscles around the neck to hold the head up. And with your elbows by your side, your arms hang down, you're not leaning forward, and you're not using the muscles in your back and the back and sides of your neck and shoulders to hold your head up, which is how most modern world dwellers spend most of their time. Leaning forward and holding their head up. And then what we do is allow ourselves to become aware of the ambient sound, which is different wherever you might happen to be. It could be sound of the wind, or the wind in the trees, or the sound of birds, or water. Or it could be traffic, or it could be airplanes. It could be voices, movements in the building, voices outside. It could be the ticking of the clock. And you're noticing the sound move through time. Ultimately, all sound is largely the same. It's us projecting unsatisfactoriness on it that makes a sound, an irritating noise. But almost all sound can be sound that we can notice moving through time. For instance, there's very little difference between the sound of passing cars and waves on a beach. And yet we find one satisfactory and the other unsatisfactory. And the solution is to notice the passage of time through sound. Or notice the passage of sound through time. And the other thing we'll notice moving through time is the movement of the belly. Just at the point where the belly meets the chest. We're able to notice the belly rising. And notice the belly falling. And we follow the movement of the belly all the way through the in-breath and all the way through the out-breath. And you'll notice that the speed of the movement of the belly is synchronized with the speed of the movement of sound through time. And notice there's no talk of the mind, no talk of the mind, no talk of stress, no talk of worry, no talk of thoughts, no talk of our emotional state, because this has got nothing to do with it. It's a different thing. It affects all of that, but the mind might be chattering, we may feel a particular way, and all we're doing, we're just dancing our dance. We're noticing the breath rising and falling and sound moving through time. Now, sometimes if we have a very busy mind, it might help if we note the movement of the breath. The way we do that is as the belly rises, we say in the mind, rising. And as the belly falls, we say in the mind, falling. Rising. Falling. And now we have three things all moving through time at the same speed. Sound, the breath, and our inner voice. It doesn't matter if the mind wanders. If the mind wanders, all we do is gently, patiently, compassionately return our attention to the passing of time. Through sound, through the breath, and through noticing our inner voice moving through time. So now checking in with our posture again. Head has a tendency to droop and we tend to go back to leaning forward. So we just place our elbows by the side, balance our head. And what we're going to do now is very simple pranayama. And all pranayama means is extend the breath. Prana is breath, ayama is extend. And a good place to start off is by bringing our attention to the center of the eyeballs. So we're allowing ourselves to become aware of whatever sensations there are in the eyes themselves. And we extend the breath just by making it a tiny little bit audible. So you can do this so that only you can hear it, or it could be so others hear it, doesn't really matter. But it's the sigh, the human sigh. Put a device on people that check their breath. You'll discover that we, on average, we sigh every 5 minutes. We're just not aware of it. We're gently extending the out-breath while we maintain our attention on the eyes, on the space right in the center of the eyeballs. So it's almost as if we're breathing the tension out of the eyeballs. And now we move our attention and we scan down over the eyes, beginning in the forehead and scanning down over the eyebrows, eyes and cheeks. Now as we breathe in, normally breathing out, scanning down from the nostrils, mouth and lips, jaw and throat. On the out breath, nostrils, mouth and lips, jaw and throat. Remembering to keep our heads balanced. And the tongue very gently in contact with the sharp part of the bottom teeth. We're scanning down as we breathe out. Breathing in normally, breathing out, scanning from the base of the skull down both of the shoulder muscles to the shoulders. As we breathe out with the extended out breath. It can only be slightly extended, it doesn't matter. You can have a long out breath, you can have a short out breath, it doesn't really matter. Just making it a little bit longer, and that's what we're focusing on as we scan down that part of the body. Focusing on the breath, on the exhale. Breathing in normally, breathing out, scanning down from the wrist, over the palm of the hand, down to the tips of the fingers. Wrist, over the palm of the hand, down to the tips of the fingers. You can also scan on the out breath from the wrist down over the back of the hand, down to the fingers. Breathing in normally, bring your attention to the space between the eyes. And as you breathe out, scanning over those four areas, eyes, jaw, shoulders, hands, down to the tips of your fingers, like a wave of relaxation moving down the body, down through your torso, down through your feet and into the ground. Breathing in, space between the eyes, breathing out, eyes, jaw, shoulders, hands, down through your feet and into the floor. Again, we're extending the out breath comfortably, making it audible if necessary. And now allowing your mind to be free and be aware of how the body feels. Check in, move into the most relaxing possible posture, balanced at the same time, so that if you fall asleep, your head will nod and it will wake you up. And again, connecting to the breath in the belly. Belly rising. Belly falling. And now moving our awareness to the point where the air enters and leaves the nostrils. And we can notice the sensation of the air as we breathe in and the sensation of the air as we breathe out. And now here's another synchronization. As we breathe in, the air in the nostrils becomes cool. And as we breathe out, the air in the nostrils becomes warm. And what we want to do is check to see if the belly starts rising at exactly the same time that the in-breath becomes cool, and if the belly starts falling at exactly the same time as the air becomes warm in the nostrils. We just want to be aware of that synchronization if it's there. Does it happen at exactly the same moment? The warmth and the in-breath in the belly, and exactly the same, the coolness and the in-breath in the belly, and exactly the same moment, the warmth and the out-breath in the belly. Any tension creeps into the body, just letting it out with the out-breath again. Now just back to noticing the rising and falling of the belly. And the passage of sound through time. Sound of traffic, wind, airplane, birds, ticking of the clock, whatever it might happen to be. Very gently, very softly, allowing yourself to become aware of your surroundings. Okay, that was mindfulness-based resilience, all condensed into an hour. So the breathing practices, stress management, the whole thing is emotional regulation, because whatever emotions you come into a meditation with, they get processed to a greater or lesser extent through the meditation. And there's your psychophysiological state changes. Some people who walk through that door, they do it, their psychophysiological state gets worse because they're so overwhelmed by the emotions that then, you know, it might not be the right time and place and all that. You know, Tuesday at 1 p.m., you can't necessarily be, you know, psychologically and physically responsive to your emotional state at that particular time. And maybe, you know, this week, month, year isn't good for them as well. But those of you that keep coming back, it's because there's an improvement in it in some way. You're calmer, you're more focused, you're more relaxed, you're less stressed, you're less worried, etc., etc. And then you think, oh, right, I can do something here, so let me try doing this a bit more. And then your skills develop, and then over time, able to go process all those pesky emotions and become calmer and more focused and more relaxed. It's not a silver bullet, but it's part of you. You're integrating these skills. You're not reliant on something external, even if that external thing is your ability to exercise. So that's a great adversity for a lot of people. It's, you know, whatever it is that gets in the way of that: illness, injury, disability, all sorts of life circumstances. We want to carry our resilience skills around with us. Okay, so that's the spiel for mindfulness-based resilience as well.